The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And while today's program is not connected to any particular performances, performance coming up, it does have to do with the results, in a sense, of performances that happened in the previous season with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. We're going to be telling you who the new music director is. If you haven't happened to have heard already today, it was just announced today, and if you happen to have attended any of the concerts, this will be your first hint, because it's music that was conducted by the new music director last season. The Illinois Symphony Orchestra has announced the name of its new music director, and at least for, I imagine, many, if not most of our listeners, you'll be getting the scoop on this show. The person who has been at least involved, if not necessarily in charge, of the search process, which has been quite extensive, running this past year or so, is Trevor Orthman, who is the executive director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. He's with us right now. Trevor, thanks for joining us on the show.
Good afternoon, Kevin.
I've had the privilege to talk to all five candidates who have all been guest conductors over your previous season, the 2011-2012 season. And in each conversation, we've sort of touched on the process that's involved, but for the sake of those who haven't heard those interviews or never really got the whole description, why don't you talk a little bit about how you went about, you meaning the Illinois Symphony, about selecting the candidates, and then what was the process during the year before we even say who actually got the gig?
Sure. We started out now almost 2 years ago in a process that involved consulting experts in the field, two experts in the field, and assembling really a large list of possible candidates for our position of music director. This list was approximately 60-some names, and from that list, with checking and sort of consulting between the various constituents, we asked about the musicians, about the candidates, narrowed this down to 32 candidates that we invited to apply for the position. From that, 28 candidates applied, and then narrowing the field further, all of those candidates were reviewed videos of their conducting by our principal musicians, as well as the search committee, which was made up of board, community council, and community members, a committee of 12 individuals, and then our principal musicians. From that, narrowed that list down even further, and then conducted telephone interviews, and this narrowed our field down to 5 finalists that would have conducted this past year. All of the candidates coming to visit the orchestra for 2 weeks during the season, conducting a symphony orchestra concert and a chamber orchestra concert. So we went from a very large list and narrowed it down to the 5, and now we're about ready to name the final candidate that the search committee has agreed upon and was really the unanimous choice of musicians, board, search committee, and audiences.
So the candidates were, I feel like we're doing the Academy Awards here, Donato Cabrera, who is resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, also music director of the Green Bay Symphony, and other positions. Ray Hotoda, who is assistant conductor of the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, and her run got a little truncated. She ended up having an illness that she couldn't come. Well, it's actually not true, was it? She was pregnant. things were a little too close for her to make the one concert. Kenneth Raskin, who is associate conductor of the Sacramento Philharmonic and other things. Andrew Sewell, music director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra and some former positions. And Alistair Willis, who's a former associate conductor of the Seattle Symphony and guest conductor with many major orchestras in this country and elsewhere, including Chicago Symphony, St. Louis Symphony, New York Philharmonic, and so on. So who's the winner?
The search committee and then the board approved that Alistair Willis will be our next music director, and he will actually be in Central Illinois at the end of June for several events sponsored by our guild to welcome him to the community, and he'll begin conducting the orchestra over the Labor Day weekend for our concerts in Springfield and this year in Mattoon, as well as Bloomington Normal. So we will have a 3-concert run over the Labor Day weekend of free concerts for the community.
Well, congratulations on the successful completion of a very long and what had to have been a fun process in many ways.
Very fun and very exciting. Well, it was, you know, a lot of work for many, many people in the organization and giving above and beyond the time as volunteers to make it all happen. It was just a very great time for the orchestra and just hopefully will signal more great things to come from the Illinois Symphony.
From your point of view, why does it matter who is the music director of an orchestra, of an orchestra of this sort?
It's really, the music director is such a key position to the success of the orchestra, providing the artistic guidance that is so needed and to motivate the musicians and really create the environment that the musicians are wanting to play for the conductor, for the music director. You know, it's that dynamic that can really change the artistic face of an orchestra, a regional orchestra, in a very short period of time. And I think, you know, in the upcoming seasons, we will see not only through the orchestra itself, but also in programming and ideas that he brings to the orchestra, that we will be making artistic choices and choices that the orchestra become really part of the community and hopefully unite the community behind the orchestra to make it a really a vital cultural institution in the communities we serve.
There was some controversy towards the end of the tenure of the previous music director, Karen Lynn Deal, that from all I've read, resulted in some strife for the orchestra, and I wondered whether the fact of that controversy figured at all in how the orchestra and the search committee went about looking at the candidates who you chose?
I mean, I think probably the biggest possible change was really the input and the necessary input. I have been involved in two other music director searches, and really looking at the input of the orchestra musicians, and giving that such high priority in the selection of the music director. They are the ones that have to rehearse and make music with, now we'll say Alistair coming up, but it's that, it's the importance and that dynamic to have the synergy between the music director and the orchestra that is so important. I mean, hopefully through the entire search process, we only did bring five great candidates that all were very, you know, capable of doing the job, but there was just, you know, there was just a spark and a fit that felt right with one candidate, and it was clearly echoed by not only the orchestra, but the audiences and community groups that the candidate visited during his time here. So it's one of those things. It's really, you know, interesting to always participate in searches, and they've, you know, sort of miraculously almost followed the same pattern that one candidate rises above the others, and then, you know, if you would have had to go to a second or third choice, then it would be much harder for the search committee to make a decision. But typically, you know, one candidate will rise above the others, and it will be, you know, in a way, a fairly clear-cut selection once the process has been concluded.
So if for some reason Alistair Willis had said, I don't want the job after all, you'd have had your work cut out for you, but he didn't say that.
Yeah, and that's it. And some orchestras, if they don't get their top candidate, they'll continue their search. So there's some orchestras I know that have gone on, you know, looking for two or three seasons before they select a music director. So luckily that didn't happen and all worked out great, and Alistair will begin his first season of symphony concerts here in October, but will be here in September to conduct our Free Labor Day concerts.
What were some of the things that the players and the committee liked about Alistair Willis?
I think, you know, musical-wise, I mean, just very dynamic on the podium, very demanding but very clear of what he wanted in all rehearsals, managed time in rehearsals very well, was very easy to work with, and some of the musicians said that they felt like they continue to improve to basically the last note of his final performance playing under him, where sometimes this orchestra performing in two communities with two concerts, sometimes that second performance may not be as exciting or go to the next level that the musicians feel it should. And, you know, many commented how they felt that, you know, the orchestra just continued to sound better and better under his leadership.
And the audience representatives must have had a role in this choice as well. What were some of their comments?
Definitely. I mean, just his interaction with the audience and his personality, and you know, reaching out and talking to as many of the audience members following performances, in the pre-concert discussions, just really giving good insights into the music. He had somewhat of a standard symphony of the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Many of the audience members said that, you know, from that performance they heard things and learned things from his talking about it that they hadn't realized or hadn't ever heard before. So it's one of those things, is he seemed to really excite the audience about the music that was being performed, even if it was a symphony that they've heard 50 or 100 times in their life.
Trevor Orthman is executive director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, and they have just announced that Alistair Willis will be their new music director after this past season where five candidates conducted both the symphony orchestra and the chamber orchestra, and Alistair Willis had that same opportunity. We'll be talking with him in just a few minutes here on Live and Local. Trevor, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin.
And here is that performance, some of that performance of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony from last November, which Alistair Willis conducted with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Here's the opening movement.
Thank you.
First movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, in a performance last November by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, conducted by its new music director, just announced today, Alistair Willis. He'll be with us in a moment. Today's broadcast on Live and Local is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, a Nurison preferred dealer at 11 West Port Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. And my next guest on Live and Local, Mr. Alistair Willis, who has been associate conductor of the Seattle Symphony Orchestra previously, also previously assistant conductor with the Cincinnati Symphony and Pops Orchestras. And I do remember, Alistair, that when we talked before, you were giving your concert in December with the Illinois Chamber Orchestra, that we discussed that you hadn't had a music directorship. Of all of the other candidates, I think you're the one who has been guest conducting all over the place and assistanting here and associating there. You've got it. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much, Kevin. I'm thrilled.
So apparently your experience as a guest conductor paid off, because, of course, you guested twice with the orchestra, as did all the other candidates. And I imagine that helped matters.
Well, it looks like it must have. It certainly didn't go the other way. Of course, all the other candidates guest conduct as well. And to be fair to me, I guess, I have been music director of a few orchestras, but non-professional. So I do have some experience, but this is, as you correctly said, my first professional engagement.
Well, I skipped over the part of your bio where it said, for example, music director of the Cincinnati Symphony Youth Orchestra, for exactly that reason, not to discredit the experience one gets with a youth orchestra, but there's youth, and then there's for the professionals, and now here you are. You'll be with the Illinois Symphony, I presume, starting in the fall.
Starting very soon, yes.
Do you have any notion at all of any of the things you might be doing, or is the news simply too new?
You know, I've got lots of notions, and I'm exploring them as we speak with, well, not as we speak, but just a few minutes ago, I was on the phone with Trevor Orthman, the executive director, and we've been speaking every day for the last few days and just exploring all sorts of notions, and it's a little too early to share anything right now on the phone. Things keep changing day by day, hour by hour, as you can imagine, with repertoire and soloists and ideas and collaborations, etc. So just know that before long, we'll have something very exciting out for you.
The concert that you gave two concerts with the orchestra, as I said, first with the full symphony orchestra, and then in November, and then in December, you were with the chamber orchestra. And on the symphony orchestra concert, you had played music by John Adams, his Short Ride in a Fast Machine, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and a crazy piece by Dave Brubeck, of which we were able to play samples because we had the soloist for that concert, Nick Kendall, in our studio in advance of that concert, a piece called Spontaneous Combustion. And I wondered if that mix of pieces, of repertory, of types of music, is a fair indicator of the sorts of things that you would like to bring to the Illinois Symphony.
I think that's a wonderful observation. I think, yes, it is a fair example. Of course, one must be so careful and so aware with programming and consider so many things. Some people love that programming, and we are thrilled to have heard from them and for them to share their excitement on the American, the new, the old, the standard, and yet something that took us out of our comfort zones, perhaps, with the Spontaneous Combustion, which, as you're right, it was a fantastically crazy piece with just the perfect soloist for that, who could really sell it, and it was written for him. So I'd love to, you know, continue programming along those ideas, but we will make sure that we're gonna please as many people as possible with our music. Now, one thought on that is, you know, if we try to please everyone, of course, we'll fail. We really have to have our joint vision and our collaborative teamwork and decide on that pretty soon, the directions we want to go forward with for the next 5 years as an institution. And once we decide that, things really will fit into place and move along. And hopefully my ideal will be, before too long, really what we program won't deter people from coming at all. It's the idea of perhaps, you know, somebody asking me what's on the program, and I would be able to say, it doesn't matter, you're going to come, you're going to have a great time anyway, whatever we're playing, because it's the Illinois Symphony Orchestra.
Well, that is always a good answer, provided, of course, you've raised that expectation that indeed people will. I'm looking at the program, for example, that you did then with the Chamber Orchestra in December, which was quite a contrast,
right.
Much more what I would call conventional. You did Handel's Water Music. You did a couple of arias by Mozart featuring the soprano Anya Matanovich, and Wagner's Siegfried Idol, a nice quiet piece, and then a favorite of mine, which I remember we talked about, Respighi's Botticelli Triptych. So nice contrast itself between that program and the other program. And I imagine when you put them together, you must have been thinking that, well, here's a type of program for perhaps one segment of the audience, here's a type of program for perhaps another segment of the audience, or something like that?
Well, yes, indeed. I really wanted to play to my strengths to show what I could bring as well. And I also wanted to test the orchestra to find out how good they were and how many styles they could play in. And they impressed me tremendously for every moment I was with them. And that's so exciting. But I think with the playing to my strengths, in a sense, what I was able to do in the chamber orchestra concert was perhaps present these pieces in the second half, particularly the Wagner and the Respighi, with some comments from the podium. We even played some little excerpts of the piece to perhaps give people an inside insight before we played it. And I'm asked to do that more and more wherever I go on my guest conducting, and I think that is one of my strengths. And so I think you might expect to see a bit more of that down the road. That's something I would love to share more of with Illinois. And, of course, I'm not saying I'm going to talk at every single concert. There'll be some variety, and they'll just when you think I might be talking, well, maybe I won't. We'll just keep everyone, you know, on the edge of their seats.
Well, and sometimes it isn't necessary to say anything.
Absolutely right.
And sometimes when you think it is, maybe it's not. Just out of curiosity, from the experience of doing the two concerts, although, of course, you didn't have the experience of course, working with the other conductors or maybe even knowing all the other conductors, was there anything about your interaction with the orchestra that suggested to you, you know, I think I might have this thing?
Well, you know what, Kevin? I've been up for several other jobs in my lifetime, and I have entertained those thoughts before of, you know, I might have something here. And that is, of course, an entertainment to one's peril. And in my case, I never won those jobs when I thought that. Now, I've got to be honest, I had those same feelings while I was in Illinois. I thought we had something, and I'm just thrilled to say that this time, it's current, it's not past tense thought. I think we have something, and I am so excited to explore these further and to grow with these wonderful musicians.
Have you had any sort of notion of some of the reasons that they chose you, that you've been told so far?
You know, one hears things, and one is happy to hear those things, but if it's from a few individuals, then I'm of course completely aware that that's just a few individuals and might not be the collective thought. So I'm always grateful to have feedback of any kind, positive or negative, from a conducting experience, and it all helps me grow and it all helps me formulate how I'm going to progress through my conducting career, and it's always very interesting. And so I was taking everything with listening to what people were telling me with interest, but of course not counting any chickens before they were hatched, but they just hatched, so now I can count my chickens.
People might be surprised. I don't remember that we talked about this when we talked before, to know that in spite of your accent, you were actually born in Massachusetts.
That is right. My mum's English, my dad was Australian, but I was born in America.
And spent a fair amount of time in Russia besides.
That's right.
Why don't you just give us a little bit of your overall background. How did you get to where you are?
Well, born in America, in Acton, Massachusetts, as you mentioned, just outside of Boston. Age 5, moved to Moscow, USSR. I have to say USSR because some people, at least here in Seattle, think Moscow could be Idaho, but there's a big difference in the two Moscows, I'm told. So
I'm told the same.
My dad was a journalist, and so he took us all over the world, really, and at age 10, we moved back to England. My family and I have two older sisters, and we went to the same school that my mother had gone to when she was a child. And my formative years were in England, hence the accent seems to be stuck from there. But then I went to Rice University after a few other music degrees in England at Bristol University and a teaching degree at Kingston University, all in England. And that was in 1996. I did a three-year orchestral conducting master's degree there with Larry Ratcliffe, my teacher. And I really haven't. I've stayed. That makes, I think, now 16 years in America. The last 16 years, I went from Rice to a job in Cincinnati, as you mentioned, and then to Seattle as their associate conductor. And I've been living in Seattle ever since. But using this as my base to guest conduct around the world.
You mentioned Larry Ratcliffe, who was at Rice and a pretty well-known teacher among conductors in the States. I'm wondering if you can talk about your experience with him and what are some of the things that you took from him that audiences and the orchestra in Springfield would have seen and will see.
Well, one really can't underestimate the impact that one's primary teachers had one primary teachers have on us as music students. And Larry inspired me and continues to inspire me in so many ways. I thought I knew how to prepare a score before I went to Rice, and I realized as soon as I got there, I had no idea how to prepare a score. The meticulous detail and focus and energy Larry puts into that was just incredible and inspiring. And that's one of the main things that I got from him, and also how he would keep a rehearsal interesting and productive, and just was an inspiration on so many levels. I would say those are the two big ones. But of course, in my experience as an assistant conductor and in traveling the world and seeing other conductors, I must say that I've learned from every single conductor I've watched. Sometimes you don't learn good things, sometimes you learn what not to do, but you're learning all the time. And in fact, that was some of the advice given to me at an early stage, was go and watch conductors. It doesn't matter how good, how big, how small, you're going to learn something. Take notes. And I've been doing that all my life. I still do that. They're more mental notes these days, but I still love going to see a conductor that I don't know or have never seen, or ones that I do. And music is just one of those incredible, renewing, always fresh, potentially always fresh art forms that touches us in so many ways, whether we are audience or conductors or musicians ourselves.
You said that Mr. Ratcliffe's way of keeping a rehearsal interesting and effective was something that you hope you have learned.
Yes.
What are some of the ways in which you think about doing that when you're working with an orchestra?
Well, one must be aware of, let's say, that the timpani player, who in a classical symphony might have 200 bars rest before he plays something. Now, if you just rehearse everybody else and this one player has played two or three notes in an hour and a half's rehearsal, that's not a great use of this person's time. So it's how to engage people who are counting rests or not playing in the entire rehearsal process, and to make sure that people aren't sitting idle for too long. It's the pacing of a rehearsal. It's the knowing who hasn't played for a while, or knowing who's played so intensely for a few minutes that they might just need to have a break while you work on somebody else for those moments. There are so many ways how to run a rehearsal, how to keep it interesting, keep people engaged. And I think it can all be encapsulated in one word, which I just love, and it's variety. I love the variety of approach. And to define that, it's in a way never letting the orchestra think they know what you're going to do. For example, let's say, just a small example, you'll usually start with the first movement of a symphony at the first rehearsal, let's say. And that's what you would normally do 9 times out of 10. But every now and then I'll say, well, let's start with the third movement or the fourth movement. And it just adds a little shift of thought. It adds a little freshness. It adds a little bit, oh, that's interesting. That's new. That's different. That's sort of caught us off guard. But here, we're right back with you. And it all adds to the moment and the experience of keeping music fresh.
You were talking a bit also about continuing to learn from other conductors by watching. Mm. And I have not seen you conduct. I've seen photos, but I've read a couple of descriptions. Somebody in particular referred to you as a very expressive conductor visually. And I wonder, for those who didn't get to either of your concerts so far, how you would describe your conducting physically.
I guess that's not really a fair question. I'm not really so aware of what I might look like to other people.
Well, how do you feel to yourself?
Well, you know, as you go through school and you go through master classes like Tanglewood and Aspen, you get videoed all the time. And after the rehearsal or the session or the master class, you sit down and you watch through the video with the teacher. And that's some of the most painful stuff you've ever seen in your life, because watching yourself conduct is quite hard. And, oh, I didn't know I did that. I really picked my nose at that moment. Oh, my gosh, I didn't need to scratch my head there. Did I put my finger in my ear at that? No, surely I didn't. And it's actually a great educational learning tool, but it's very hard to watch. I'd like to think that I'm expressive. I think that I try to embody the music and to be the music. But above all, I don't want to get in the musician's way. I want to help the musicians. That's the conductor's job. I don't want to draw too much focus to myself, which is kind of ironic to say, because if you want to look at it from one level, the orchestra and the audience are all focused on the podium, it seems, or looking that way. Of course, in the audience, you can look wherever you like at any time at the orchestra, but the person moving the most really is the conductor. But I found that some of my best performances over the years have been when I've tried to be the most invisible. I'm not sure that might make much sense, because how can a conductor really be invisible in that prominent position? But really, it's not about the conductor. It's not really about any person at all. Music is greater than all of us, and we're all there really for the composer, for the muse, for the infinite expression of music.
Well, as you say, the conductor tends to be kind of the visual catalyst, not only for the audience, but of course also for the orchestra. The orchestra is supposed to watch the conductor at least every once in a while to get an idea of what's the corporate notion of how this music is going to go. And I wonder if, have you ever had a teacher or a coach say to you that you should do certain things visually simply to be interesting and to keep the attention of either the audience or the orchestra?
I have never had any of my teachers say that to me.
And I assume, therefore, that you haven't, that you've taken the fact they haven't said it to heart, and that whatever gestures you make are simply going to be to somehow convey what's in the music.
Well, that is my intent, but it might be someone's opinion, and watching me conduct or somebody else conduct, that, my goodness, that looks flashy, that looks unnecessary, that looks too showy. And, you know, I strive not to do that, but you look at some of the great conductors today, and when they become the music, I mean, Leonard Bernstein himself, not of today, of course, because he's not with us anymore, but he himself was criticized to the hilt of, you know, being the cymbals and doing that big crash for the player from the podium, which the player really didn't need, but the audience loved seeing that energy and his two hands coming together as if he was playing the cymbals himself. It's not necessary, but that's what music meant to him, and it was so heartfelt, to me it seemed. It wasn't put on, it wasn't fake. And so, really, there's there's so much speculation one could have, and those are my goals. Whether I break them, then I can't really say in the moment what I'm going to do, but those are at least my aims.
How do you imagine balancing your life, your conducting life at this point, now that you're going to be the music director of the Illinois Symphony starting in the fall? Of course, they are not close to a full-time orchestra. I imagine there will still be plenty of time for you to be guest conducting elsewhere.
Well, my first priority now is the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. And I do have already some guest conducting engagements lined up for next season, which we are working around, which is wonderful. But any engagements that I have outside of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra for future seasons, of course, will have to work around the Illinois Symphony. And that's quite clear for me. And I'm still open to guest conducting, but my focus now is Illinois.
So you will become an Illinoisan for a while.
Sounds
hopefully
great.
Hopefully a good while. It's Alistair Willis, the brand newly announced music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, after a season's worth of guest conductors and having himself worked with the orchestra twice. And again, congratulations on your new gig.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
We heard earlier the opening movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony as conducted by Alistair Willis with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra from last November. Here is the final movement with the lead-in from the third movement here on Live and Local. Thank you. Alistair Willis conducting the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in concerts last November in Bloomington and Springfield. It was the final movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. He is the new music director, officially announced today, and he will start his tenure with a full season in the fall, but various other events, celebratory events, coming up in the month of June. Actually, technically, his new position is effective June 24th. For more information, you can go to the Illinois Symphony's website, which is ilsymphony.org. And for more on Alistair Willis, it's alistairwillis.com. That's AlistairWillis. You're listening to WYL-FM. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is live and local. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. Some events you can see and hear live in our listening area the next couple of days. The Diva and the Dude are at Clark Bar in Champaign this evening at 6:30. Tom Irwin and Jeff Ryan are at Bob's Butternut Hut in Springfield tonight at 9. The Duke of Uke is at Anita Purvis Nature Center in Urbana this evening at 6:30. David Howie is at 301 Magnolia in Champaign this evening at 6. Olivia Flanagan is at the Iron Post tonight playing jazz at 7. It's in Urbana. Desafinado are at Bouvon's in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. Joni Dreyer, Bob Watson, and Matt Stewart and friends are at Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6:30. Dave Luttrell is at the Creek Pub and Grill in Chatham tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. It's the Game of Love in Preview. That's the Station Theater's upcoming production at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute tomorrow during the noon hour for a free preview. And acoustic guitarists, Goran Ivanovich and Andreas Kapsalis are at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. And in fact, they're going to be live for the hour on Live and Local tomorrow. It'll be a sunny afternoon, cooler than in recent days. You probably knew that already, the high around 76, very comfortable outside. Tonight, partly cloudy, slight chance for showers after midnight, the low around 50, and then cooler the next couple of days, at least. Showers likely tomorrow morning, then occasional showers and a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow afternoon, the high around 60 tomorrow. Friday, cloudy skies with another decent chance of showers, the high around 63. We're currently at 74. It's 1 o'clock. And you're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Danville. W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the series collected to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. And just looking ahead, one day on Friday's Live and Local, another live performance by the Hen House Prowlers, making a return appearance both in Urbana for performances that night and on this show.